Here's Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. I'm sure you've heard some crazy stories, Pooley, seen crazy stories, clerical errors, fax machine doesn't work. You think you're talking about the wrong player or a different player. How often does that happen behind the scenes?
Way more than you want to think, gentlemen, and it's more than a one-person job, I can tell you right now. And I think we're going to see models develop like is in Montreal right now, where essentially you have two GMs, right? Jeff Gorton and Kent Hughes. Now, Kent Hughes is the face, and that's the guy you see more often, but Jeff Gorton is right there riding shotgun with him. And I think it's a two-person job. I really do. I marvel. And, oh, you would have played for Pat Quinn. Like, think about being the GM and the coach.
I don't see him as a dot the I's and cross the T's type of guy.
No, just in your spare time, oh, when you're not coaching, just make sure you know all those rules.
Yeah, that's tough. That would be
really
tough.
You know, and there's so many. But O'Reilly was a different case. It was a different type of free agency involved. He had gone to Europe, so it was past a certain date, and there was different things involved, and you got to have somebody that just does that full time. There's too many other factors involved. It really is crazy that it doesn't happen more often. Like, that's the most amazing thing, is that there aren't mistakes made more often because of all the different wrinkles and all the different rules and everything else that goes on.
Yeah. Is there anyone in the league office that plays like a buffer role? That, in other words, it's like, guys, I don't
you
think
you might want to sign at the bottom there.
Yeah.
Or this is nullified.
Like, there's some small print here. You might want to take a look. Does that happen?
Yes, there are. There are people involved in that office, and that's the group that Brandon Pridham came out of, right? You know, basically the rules that wrote the CBA. I mean, they wrote the CBA. Sean McLeod heads it up, and that's what they do. And Damian Echevarriata is that in part of that group, and so, and they know everything inside out, and they're not, you don't want to see guys burned.
Well, how hard. Come nobody didn't send an email to Jay Feaster back in the day?
I can't answer that.
It might have been too late.
Do you remember that, Pooley? That was insane.
Yes, I do. It would have been, I mean, a catastrophe that had happened. It would have been. You just gave up whatever category was in, two first and second or whatever that was at that time. And then, by the way, anybody can now have the player for the price that you paid him. And it would have gone in reverse order, right? So it would have been the least team that got the first shot at him. So I think disaster was saved on that one by Colorado matching the offer sheet.
Wow. So, Pooley, before we get into hard hockey talk, do you want to just walk through the incident that you witnessed outside of the keg the other night? I laid it down and I said that anybody, we could have a GoFundMe to pay the keg in Montreal to find the CCTV video replay of it. But I mean, I was still a little bit sore the next day, and I actually admitted to the guys, I got up as quick as I could. When I fell, you helped me, but it just that I went down pretty hard. Obviously,
you went down hard. Now, you know, I normally wear boots when I go in Montreal. Forget the suit and the boots thing. You just wear boots because it's crazy. I mean, there's so much snow there right now, and you're wandering through. But that's a legitimate mistake because it's a flat patio. There's stairs, but then there's like a ramp. So it goes gradually at that point. So it's like, it's literally like you just fall off the top part and now you're on a little ramp going down. So that's legitimate. There's no question about it. You did go down hard. I saw the police outline of your body on the ground after you got up. It had already been outlined, one arm kind of up and across. But you went down pretty hard. I thought you were fine. You told us you were fine.
Yeah.
So you were a little bit sore afterwards?
We talked about it yesterday. When you go down, it doesn't matter if you've broken both legs. You get up and you try and fight through it and let everybody know you're good.
All good. Yeah, I'm good.
Nothing you have to. Here. It's mandatory.
I limped my way to the Marriott and barely made it into bed. I woke up a little rough yesterday, but I was fine. But it was more embarrassing than anything.
You're a trooper.
So you were fine when you were walking the two blocks with us, but then you weren't fine after that?
Oh, yeah. I limped my way home.
Get around that corner.
I had damage in my ankle, too. I was like, my whole left side was struggling, but I was fine. Somehow I was.
It's all good. You made it to the All-Star break, yeah, and that's all that matters.
That is when you'd get hurt, too, is right before the All-Star break.
Exactly.
That's when a player would get hurt, right?
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
No question about it. There was a famous story about a Leaf, right, who broke his ankle skiing and then came back. It was one of the Euros. And then they strapped him in a boot. He went out for practice and then, oh, spun an ankle.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't Malakoff do that back in the day?
No, Vladdy had, I remember, he was with the Canadians. And they went down to New York or something. And he had knee surgery. And during the break or something, people spotted him skiing.
Yeah, he was in Tromblon.
Yeah, Mont Tremblant.
Yeah, bombing around Tromblon. Like, man, that guy's... Those ligaments look pretty good.
And the other one was he had bought like some $50,000 watch in New York, and it got buzzed, and he wore it through customs, and customs was waiting for him going, actually, you got to pay tax on that. Because I think somebody put it in the media, like, Malakoff showed up with his new watch, and customs was like, well, you have to pay duty on that.
Right.
So I think he got jammed up twice.
Well, yeah, that just sounds like bad luck, guys.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. There's nothing you can do. Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey analyst, did you learn anything from that Leafs-Bruins game that you didn't know prior to Puck Drop last night?
Well, I've seen the Bruins play. I just had them last week or a week and a half ago in Montreal, and Montreal played really well against them and ended up losing in the last couple minutes. And what Jimmy Montgomery did each period, because it was a close game, the last two shifts or three shifts of the period, he just loaded up his line. And sure enough, he did it in a tie game late. Bergeron wins the draw, Pastrnak gets the shot, Marchand goes to the net, and it's the game-winning goal. So it's a nice luxury to have. I think in the last two games that I've seen them, so one live and one last night, their depth is a little better than I even thought it was. And, you know, I mean, you look at last night, all their defensemen were in on the scoring, I believe, except for Clifton. Everybody had a point from the D position. And that Lindholm's a good player, guys. He's up ice all the time. He's a good player. And, you know, Greer, that was such a weird thing. It was like Greer scored, and then Simmons said, you got to put me out there because a guy like that can't score against him. I'm going to go beat him up. Like, it was 2 seconds later, he got beat up after he scored. It's like, we can't let that guy score. It was almost like, it was strange. Because I was watching, and I said, that guy just scored a goal. And 2 seconds later, he's in the penalty box for getting hammered.
Yeah. Man, and Simmons threw some bombs.
Yeah, he hit him with that first one that was over, right?
Yeah.
It was just over, that first punch. I mean, Simmons can still handle himself so well. But wasn't it like he went out there right after that goal and said, you know, change the flow, whatever, but it was like, I'm going to beat up the guy that scored. He can't score against us. He's a fourth-line player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that Zacha, that was a, you know, Donnie Sweeney, he's taken a lot of heat because of that one draft, right, in 2015.
Yeah, the three picks.
He had the three picks, 13, 14, and 15, and the next three kids picked were Barzell, Kyle Connor, and Thomas Chabot were the next three. And the only one he got of his three was DeBrusk.
Yeah.
Right. And so, but he's made some really good trades, guys. He has that Lindholm trade last year before the deadline. That's an excellent trade. And it didn't pay off last year, but he gets him re-signed, and now he's got a stud 1-2 defenseman. The Taylor Hall deal was right before the deadline. And I know Buffalo, he wanted out, and they were going to move him, but that was a good trade. And the Pavel Zacha trade, he gave up Eric Halla for that kid. That kid was the number six overall pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets back and he gets kind of the magic of the checkmates, they're calling them, you know, in-house. And he gets a couple guys in Krejci. And now they can drop Pastrnak down to the second line. So when I talk about the depth, I don't think it's just the third and fourth lines. Now you got a second line with David Pastrnak sitting on it. You still got DeBrusk coming back as well. So I think they're deeper than they've been maybe all the way back to their cup team. So I don't know if it surprised me, but I noticed it for sure.
Speaking of their depth, Pooley, as far as the Maple Leafs trying to do something with their depth,
Hayes brought up a couple of different scenarios in the first hour. One being like a couple pieces, like if you were talking about St. Louis and O'Reilly and Barbashev, that, and that kind of would push some guys down to play in more depth type roles, or just go for a big dog like the kid out in San Jose, the Meyer kid. Which way would you lean on, like if you were in the management position, how would you assess that? Which do you think would be more beneficial?
Just with those two options, though, I would take O'Reilly and Barbashev and the two pieces. Barbashev plays a kind of a heavy game, and O'Reilly would let you bump a yarn croak down. You know, Meyer gives you, he's a big body, but he's more of what you have, and there's that complex qualifying offer next year, right? All the way around, I'd rather take those two players that you mentioned. Now, it's going to take a lot to get those two players. You know, and you could say goodbye to Matthew Knies, who, you know, because if I'm on the other side of that, I'm asking for him as part of whatever's coming back for players like that, for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Two for rentals, sure. Too. But, like, that's kind of where I was coming. Like, what was determined last night, and I think what we've seen all year, and I think it applies with Tampa, too, Pooley, is that they just have more depth. Like, everything you just detailed about Boston. And then at the end, you go, oh, they also have DeBrusque still coming back, plus a deadline where they might acquire something.
Right.
Yeah. Like, it's just the Leafs, they at least have depth. You can't be a top five team in the league without it. But to match that depth, and I would argue Tampa's depth, 1 through 12 up front, 1 through 6 on the back end, is also better than the Leafs. You got to address it, or, you know, do you just go big game hunting and add a fifth guy up front and say, we're leaning on five guys? Like, we're just chips in the middle, five. Let's see what happens.
It is, but you're five. If you put another guy in that mix, you're just going to bite away at the minutes of the other guys, you know, even if it's a minute or two. I don't think, you know, with some of the depth they've added, Brian, up front, you know, I don't really know what, I guess, Holmberg is, or, you know, how Aston Reese is going to be. We've seen flashes from them, but nothing that says, of all that group, David Kampf is the most reliable by far. But do you really know what Joey Anderson's going to give you if he's one of your guys in depth in the playoffs? And you know, the beauty of some of the other teams is they've established it over a longer period of time. Like, Charlie Coyle is now a third-line center, right? That's a pretty good third-line center. And a weird twist, he got to be a second-line center last year because he had to be a second-line center. So he's had all those matchups for a year, and now you drop him into the three-hole because you get Krejci back. So just that advantage, I mean, your third line right now in Boston, when DeBrusque comes back, has a Hart Trophy winner on it in Taylor Hall and Charlie Coyle. It's your third line. And so, you know, the pieces at times, it's looked like they were there. I think David Kampf, once again, I think he'd be a great four. If you can keep him in the four hole, you know, I'd really like that because then he's killing penalties as well. But is Yarncroak one of your, can you find a way to drop him down?
Yeah.
And you know, Kerfoot, I think Kerfoot's going to do what Kerfoot does wherever he's playing. But if you go and get that and say, okay, we're going to have the big four and then Meyer's going to be your five and we're just shooting for that, you're still only getting two lines out of it. You're only eating that many minutes. And, you know, is he taking minutes away from one of your other big four?
So, Pooley, you know, watching last night's game, from, let's take everything out of it. If you're in management, I would argue you don't let one game dictate your thought process, because, you know, Boston clearly was motivated. It looked like the Leafs weren't, you know, they weren't all there as far as, you know, their A game. So if you're behind the curtain, does a game like that confirm suspicions that you have, or, you know, confirm thought process that you have if you're Kyle Dubas? Or do you just park it and say, okay, it's just another, you know, kind of in-season test where, you know, I kind of feel like where my group is at? Like, my point is knee-jerk reaction shouldn't be made off of one game, even if it is against a measuring stick game against the top-tier team.
Absolutely not, Jim. You can't do that.
Right.
And in a way, are you less concerned because Marner was -4 and Nylander was -3? Well, they're not going to do that very often, if ever again. And, right, you know, your best players weren't your best players. Now, this group has shown that on most given nights, their best players are the best players. There's not many nights when Mitch Marner's not there. There's not many nights when, this year particularly, when Willie Nylander hasn't been there. Tavares has been as steady as a rock, and Matthews is Matthews. So that part up front, you know, do I have a little bit of concern about Liljegren and Sandin? And they were minus three each, but it was a more physical game. In their matchups, they've got Trent Frederick running them, or, you know, guys like that who make it more physical. And they're going to have to stand up in that type of game, because that's what's going to happen with matchups in the playoffs with those heavier guys. And they've been really good this year. They weren't good last night. And so I don't throw out the year for a night for sure. But and they've played well against Boston the last two times. So no, I don't put too much in it. But what it reaffirms is, Boston's a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to guys in Boston. They're like, believe me, there's concern about the Leafs if you're in Boston. I know they have the false bravado and everything that, you know, that they own them and they control them. They also know this is the best Leafs team that they've seen in the last couple of years. And that's, they know that. It was interesting because I got, you know, I had a chance to sit with a couple of guys and before in the morning skate and in Montreal, and they'll say that. And they're wide open. They'll say, this is, you know, this Toronto team. They ask me about it because they know I do games and say, and that's a really, really good team.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no mistaking. Now, once again, Liljegren and Sandin weren't very good last night. They've got to be better to be your third pair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, Bunting was in the middle of everything last night. And
you know, the temper tantrum on the bench, guys, it was awesome because it was the boy who cried wolf, right? Like, it was. And, you know, he's gotten away with a lot. And just the opposite last night, he wasn't trying to get away with anything. He got clocked. And in whatever in the past, you know, those referees are human, right? And if they get tricked or fooled, they don't forget. And I think it was Francis Chiron who just said, no, you're not getting that call. You're not. I don't know what you would have had to do to get a call against Bunting in that situation.
That's it. Like, by the end, the whistles were away. And like, there were legit penalties that should be called. Absolutely should be called.
No question. The one in front of the net, the Carlo one on Bunting, was a penalty. And it was a four.
Yeah.
And but the temper tantrum on the bench was the kid at the bus stop.
Just losing it.
It was the kid at the bus stop whose bluff got called. That's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't getting his way, and he wasn't getting bailed out on this one, and he just was not getting it. And he was beside himself. And, you know, he's a guy who draws as many or more penalties than anybody in the league does. And he's very effective at it. But with certain officials, that has a limit, particularly if they've been burned in the past and they know it.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, those guys go and watch tape, and they're told, you know, they have to watch tape just like players watch tape. And if they get burned and it's more than once by one guy, you know, they'll take it once. But if that's happened a couple of times, they're going to say, you do not get the benefit of the doubt if I don't see something 100%.
Yep.
And that would be the case, right? The ref didn't see 100% of it. So he was not getting the benefit of the doubt there. And sure enough, it should have arguably been a four. For sure.
Absolutely. All right, Pooley, we'll leave it there. Enjoy the All-Star weekend, and we'll do it again soon.
Okay, guys. Have a great night.
Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota and check out Maple Toyota's pre-owned inventory. Arriving daily, it's time to Toyota. Visit MapleToyota.com. See, Mark Stone had back surgery out indefinitely. Does that mean the season? I can't get a read on that.
And I also think that they will use his $9.5 million to go big game hunting at the deadline too.
Well, they better. They're in trouble.
Well, they're a cap team. They're a cap team that's been playing gymnastics since they come in
for years. Yeah, they've lost four in a row. Eichel is not their savior right now.
Yeah, well, there
hasn't been their savior in
Stones. They'll be proactive.
He has a chance to be.
Yeah,
but that's he has a chance to be.
For sure, he does.
You talk about the Leafs pushing their chips in. There are other teams around the league that are going, hey, you know, we see a pathway here too. So whether it's Meyer or whoever else is available, like, it's interesting for me to see who's going to be available or gets the trigger pulled on in Vancouver.
Yes, and I think there's more. I think the mentality in the West is different than in the East, because the East has more top end talent. Right. Like, Boston's a great team,
Carolina,
the Leafs are great.
Carolina's
a great team. Tampa's a great team. The Rangers, I think, have the chance to do a lot of damage. You look in the West, who's the best team? Like, it's, I think it, we all say Colorado when they're healthy and rocking, for sure. And okay, let's concede that. Colorado is that by the end
maybe
of the year.
Maybe this year, if they get goaltending, maybe the oil can.
Well, I think this Dallas team might, you don't sleep on them, too. That Ottinger's a player.
He's good. Good. He's like good. Winnipeg in a similar spot, but I don't look at them as like, wow, they're so good.
Dude, if McGee's and Draisaitl will crank it up like they did last year, and Jeff Skinner's good in net, maybe they squeak through.
Yeah, listen, they're red hot right now. Like, yeah, the Oilers are hitting the brakes.
Back, maybe they add, who knows?
Yeah.
I think there's, you know, there are teams, you're right, like, there are teams out there that you go, if they get going, that's a good team, that's a good team. Out east, there's some teams that have kind of proven and been there and been good teams all season long, haven't had these, like, real dry stretches. Boston, Carolina, the Leafs, Tampa.
Jersey's been really consistent.
You know, there's five or six back. I'm not even including Pittsburgh and Washington.
Right.
Like, those.
Again, I think the Rangers are a good team, like, well-built.
Like, there's depth on both sides. It's just different type. Like, I think out west there's been more inconsistency with teams that we think are good, where in the east there's teams that have been good and been pretty consistent from pillar to post here
so far. Yeah, exactly.
So, be interesting to see. But that's where I think this deadline is going to get crazy.
Well, I agree, because I think, you know, Boston's the clear-cut best team. Like, even Sheldon Keefe said after the game, like, they scored 40 more goals than anyone in terms of their goal differential. Like, they're plus 40 on anybody. They're beating up on everyone. And they're now 13 points up on the Leafs with a game in hand. It's gone. They're gone. They've been gone for 2 or 3 months.
Right.
They're gone. They're the team to beat. Period.
Yeah.
But the nature of the Stanley Cup playoffs is that doesn't mean anything.
It often doesn't mean you're winning anything.
No, it doesn't guarantee you anything.
The team that always dummies everybody, they are not around at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what they can do.
Yeah, we'll see what kind of matchup they get. We'll see what the injuries are like in 2 months, where their goaltending's at. There's a lot of different things.
Yep.
So, you know, you put all your chips in the middle. There's teams that, you know, that Boston's doing that, Toronto's going to do that, Tampa's going to do that, Carolina I think will do that, Colorado's going to do that.
Is some of these teams have cap space. Like, I think Carolina might have some cap space.
Yeah,
like
but are they willing to spend it? I don't know. Like, that's
well, and
on the owner
to do. But like, you've got to, like, that's what I mean. Like, if you're going to go all in, you got to go all in. Like, you know, you're worried about the future and all of that. Like, future is now. Like, this Leaf team, the way that it's constructed, this is now. It's they've got to make one or two significant moves to be...
just feel even better about yourself.
Agreed.
Yeah. Like Pooley said, the rest of the league's looking at the Leafs, and, like, they're a really good team.
Sure.
Really good team. And if they're healthy and they're in a good place, they will be a really tough out. But...
so are, you know,
so like will other say, teams. Yeah, so it applies teams. To other teams, yeah, and do what you can to improve yourself.
Yep, I agree.
And then see where it takes you. Mike Johnson will join us later this afternoon. We're going to get into some NFL, some Super Bowl talk. More of a recap, too, on Brady, the Brady news, and what he might do with his future. Mike Nolan's coming up, former Niners and Broncos coach, and now NFL Network analyst. So we'll catch up with Mike in about an hour from now. So Mike Johnson, Mike Nolan in the 6 p.m. hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.